If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
The dynamite from the most wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Man, we need the Sum 41 remix of that song. I think we have to advance with all these AEW milestones.
We'll see if we can give them a call and get that. Yeah,
send them a sample of this. Say, can you guys do this song in your
sure.
style?
Yeah,
they'll get right on that, I'm sure. We are here to chat about Dynamite 300, but we also want to make note of several shows on the site today. Pollock and Thurston, big discussion on Phil, and Brandon Thurston's opinion piece from earlier this week that generated a lot of attention.
I loved it, and I can't get enough of CM Punk discussion. Is there something wrong with me? I guess not, because it seems to reflect most of the wrestling audience's feelings about this guy. We must have recorded like 50,000 hours of CM Punk content, and I'm still completely captivated, and I still want to talk about this guy. He's probably the most interesting person to talk about.
We had this discussion. Like, I think he's the most compelling figure in pro wrestling, and it shows. Like, every year there is some big, and maybe sometimes many, multiple times per year, that he's just always somebody that is this lightning rod for, you know, positive, negative, whatever, wherever you fall on. Like, he does feel like he is like that main character of wherever he is stationed in a company.
Oh, certainly. Yes. Mm.
So that is up today. And then coming up on Thursday, Waiting and I go to the movies, and we are going to review F1, the movie, starring Sonny Hayes and Javier Bardem.
And the entire 2023 F1 grid.
Yes, yes. Where this is the closest Toto Wolff is going to get to an Emmy, or not an Emmy, an Oscar.
And
huge role, breaking boundaries.
You hearing about these Verstappen Mercedes rumors?
No, I'm out of the loop.
They are there. They're out there.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
I love it.
Yeah.
Mr. Verstappen encouraging his son to bolt?
That I don't know. I don't know what influence
if they're on the verge of losing it, dude, Christian Horner is going to be the odd man out. He will be the collateral damage, I think. I think Verstappen wins that power play.
We shall see what happens. Yeah.
Okay. That's coming up on Thursday. And also, brand new month here at the Post Wrestling Cafe. And it's $6 to jump on board. That gets you all of our bonus shows, including the F1 movie review, including every Rewind Away and all of the archives. And you will have a front row seat to our G1 coverage, which kicks off July the 20th. We'll have our first show dropping, and we are going to have coverage of every single tournament match through August 17th. So that starts the weekend of July 19th and 20th, and will be exclusive on the Post Wrestling Cafe. But that's not all, Way. We're also going to be giving you...
What?
I was going to talk about my new favorite show, Ironheart.
Okay. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Rich and WH, I believe, just finished recording their review. I thought this would be like a like a slow rollout thing. They released this thing in like two chunks, basically. So we did episodes 1 to 3 last week. They're going to talk about basically episodes 4 to 6, which includes the finale this week. So that is
put them all out in 2 weeks.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting rollout. I think in some ways might give you a bit of a sense of like how confident they feel about the show. But last week's review, WH was very critical of the show. I'm very curious to hear what they thought about the finale. So yeah, that'll be out for everybody in the morning in the Post Wrestling Cafe. And just a note, everybody, you know, $6 a month is basically what we ask for access to everything. But if you don't like subscribing to something, you don't like, you know, a recurring bill, and you just want to pick up these shows a la carte, we offer all of our cafe bonus shows for just $3. Obviously, it makes a lot more sense to just pay $6 so you get two and you get everything. But if you just want to pick up one of them, for instance, if you just want to listen to the F1 review or our Ironheart review or our latest edition of Rewind Away, where I talk about WWE Full Metal with Nate and Chris from LA, it's
and
just
the Eagles.
And the Eagles, did you finally catch that clip?
I'm slowly. It's my.
Were you shocked? Were you shocked that the Razor Ramon theme song was a rip off of that Eagles song.
I loved the deep reference that you were able to bring to that, and it was it's my workout podcast is yours, so I'm slowly going through it. It's enjoyable.
All right. Okay. Well, what's your workout?
I mean, do you want like
break it all down for you? No, it's okay.
Well, check all of that. And again, postwrestlingcafe.com. Great month coming up for all of you out there. Tonight, we are going to Ontario, California, the Toyota Center 5057, according to WrestleTix, which if you throw out the two Grand Slams in Australia and Mexico, this is their highest TV crowd of the year, passing the 5,000 mark. Mm. And to mark the occasion, Hangman Page comes out to start the show and says that he has promised to win the title at All In, free it from the dreaded briefcase, and he will keep this vow with his life. He will die if he doesn't win the title. That's the ultimate babyface promise. I'll kill myself if I don't win this. Not since Kane threatening to light himself on fire has a title challenger been so confident.
I mean, it is very fitting with the challenge he's about to make.
Well, it does all line up here because he knows that in a Jon Moxley match, he knows the Elite and the Death Riders are going to do a dozen run-ins. So let's make it a Texas death match. So Moxley and Shafir arrive. Paige, you are putting your life, your career, and your health on the line for this title. And I know, Hangman, you don't want it that badly. You're going to lose at All In, and you don't want to win. You don't want to wake up as champion and all of the pressure it comes with. You liked winning the Owen because it wasn't the tip of the mountain. I live in pressure. And when people call themselves the best wrestler in the world, that's basic bitch shit.
Ooh. Shots fired? Come on.
Yeah.
It had to have been, honestly. Well, I mean, okay. Benefit of the doubt. Who else refers to themselves as best in the world? Best wrestler in the world.
Bryan Danielson obviously does.
He hasn't for a long time.
Yeah, well, basic bitch shit. And he said, I'm more than that. And Moxley had like the most minor of flubs, and this crowd just leaped on top of Moxley.
Were they chanting bald at him too?
They were chanting bald at him as well, which was a little annoying, but they've introduced that. That's maybe their version of what now. And Paige, you don't have what it takes to go that far, and he says that you wouldn't be able to walk away from it. So Paige slaps Moxley, and they get into a fight. The rest of the Death Riders come in. Paige, meanwhile, has pulled out a fork that he has had in his pocket this whole time. So he knew where this was going to be going, or he just, you know, he's got to carry a weapon on him. So Yuta and Shafir enter. Shafir starts slapping him repeatedly, and Yuta goes for the ankle. And Claudio, the returning Claudio, tackles Hangman. They stomp him down and hit him with a neutralizer. And as they leave, Paige gets on the mic and says, is that the best you've got? and he's still standing. Claudio goes to return when the ops stand him down, and Shafir pops up from behind with the briefcase, gets caught by Hangman, and tells Moxley to be the champion he claims to be, make it a Texas death match. So Moxley agrees, and it ends with Hangman stating that he will prove that he will do whatever it takes by striking Marina with a buckshot lariat. And you had 5,000 people love the visual of a woman being struck by a man to kick off 300 episodes of Dynamite.
I mean, I don't know what it says about me, because I loved it too. I thought this was such a holy shit moment.
And I mean, they've been teasing the spot with Marina for months one of the men finally putting their hands on Marina Shafir.
Yeah. I think Paige is like a perfect modern babyface. I mean, in that he shows vulnerability really well, but he's also no Boy Scout. You know, a Cody Rhodes and a John Cena would never do this. Obviously, they wouldn't be permitted to do something like a, you know, buckshot lariating, Marina Shafir. But the fact that Paige heading into All In as the main character of the company, one of the big, you know, go home segments is him buckshot lariating the female, you know, essentially like enforcer of the Death Riders. I just thought was like exactly like the type of thing that distinguishes him from perhaps what a WWE would be able to offer in a leading star. And obviously, this is not because he dislikes women and, you know, enjoys attacking women, but because
I thought that was the undertone here. He's okay, he's a male chauvinist that feels that.
Yay. Yeah. No, it's because this particular woman is more than deserving of comeuppance. That's been built up, you know, for almost an entire year now. So to finally have this, you know, cashed in, you could say, you know, for this moment, I mean, I thought it was just a great, you can even say heroic moment for Hangman Page. And Hangman already felt really hot going into this match, but they just continued to find ways to like raise that peak even higher with these sort of segments. And I thought stealing the briefcase was a great way to get Mox to agree to the death match. And man, I don't know why, like I don't know how many people were suggesting Texas death match. And I'm kind of surprised that we didn't come up with it ourselves. It's almost so perfect. It's Texas. And it's like two guys who have kind of made a name for these sort of matches. So,
especially Hangman, this is like the Hangman specialty, and it's a match that you can conceive of closing what could be a 5+ hour show as well. That's going to be its unique brand of violence. And like, you're going to have just a really violent, really bloody match, and kind of the promise of like the big heroic win at the end of it that the audience is going to be anticipating.
Yeah. Tonally, I think it's more than suitable given the stakes involved. And like, if this whole thing is something we're supposed to look at as sort of like an Avengers Endgame, you know, through AEW's cast of characters, it provides the path for everybody to show and get a shot in to just finally send the Death Riders away.
If there is a way to do it, and this would be the way I would hold off on some of them. Like, if this is the moment that you get, say, like your Avengers moment, and it's staving off the Death Riders, and you've got Darby Allin, you've got Danielson, you've got Copeland, and you've got Sting. Mm-hmm. And those are the four that appear, and you just do.
How about Tony? Does Tony get a shot in on your left? Tony Khan shows up with a flamethrower.
Tony Stark, yeah. I think that would be, like your cameos that you
awesome.
Could use in the main event. And and that would be a reason, like, keep Copeland off. And I think you could do, like, the big visual at the
end. That's when you get your big, like, Swerve Page, maybe Union as well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Swerve should actually be incorporated in there some way.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the movie starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. So we also had the crossover with Superman. So we had several of these spots, starting off with Rachel Brosnahan with Timeless Toni Storm. And she wrestled in high school, so Timeless Toni Storm came up with various names for her, including the Metropolis Maven. I'm just going to say, these spots, as we always say with these, it shows great faith that Warner Brothers has in its one of its top cable properties. I thought these were terrible.
I thought these were pretty lame. Yeah, you could just call them out, John. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, it was a worthwhile attempt to, like, cross-promote, but I think this sort of cross-promotion, like, requires a bit more effort and creativity and just, a bit more interesting idea. And clearly these were recorded, like, almost with very little time given. You know, hey, let's invite these guys
to have 5 minutes.
Come up with something, and the results kind of spoke for themselves. And it's somewhat disappointing because, like, we've seen great pre-produced bits with Toni Storm and her production sort of, like, you know, brain trust. And that was sort of lacking in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, both. There was another one later. I thought they were both just not good. Mm. Mercedes Moné against Mina Shirakawa for the TBS Championship. Toni is out for not just the steak dinner, but also a cake commemorating Mercedes' 1,000th match. Many milestones, man, this week.
How accurate is this? I mean,
I didn't fact check this.
Cage match Mercedes Moné. Let's see where she's getting that record. I mean, obviously she could be writing it herself, but okay, according to Cage Match, I'm going to Monet's very first match. Let's see here. 1,000. Wow.
Okay.
So according to Cage Match, all right.
Well, I'm sure that's what she's going by.
Yeah.
Kept like a record book like Jericho did.
I'm sure Cage Match is missing something. Okay. Like, she must have had like one or two matches at the very beginning that might not be recorded. But okay, if we're following the official record here, Cage Match is it.
Okay. That's what they're going by. Not that they made a big deal out of it. And maybe the biggest swerve was that this cake was not used on anybody. It was a decoy cake.
Mm.
Like, when has that happened? Or someone doesn't get the cake in the face.
I hope somebody got to enjoy it afterwards.
Moné lays in the center of the ring, just like Toni, as they go to a picture-in-picture. Mina eventually comes back and applies a figure four on the post on Bret Hart's birthday, no less. It's a lot of symbolism.
How many milestones do we have on July the 2nd? Holy shit, wow.
So many. Yeah.
Bret Hart's birthday, AEW 300, Mercedes.
Is this where I tell you Bret's age and you feel older?
No, it's fine. It's okay.
How old do you think Brett is today?
65.
68.
Okay.
Close.
All right.
Then she continued to work on the knee of Moné, and Moné would be injured throughout the match with the knee. Mina hits a tornado DDT off of the steps. Crowd was getting into this quite a bit. And then it's Moné with a sunset bomb into the corner, hits the double knees, but Mina recovers, gets another figure four, and they reach the rope. And Mina tries for the glamorous driver. The moneymaker gets blocked, and then it's rolling elbows and a head kick by Mina. Hits the glamorous driver, and it was a near fall. And Moné, like, she moved the arm up, but it was like the crowd, like, booed this because they did not see this as much of an authoritative kick out. And after that, it's a running knee. Moné kicks out at one, hits a lung blower, and then as Mina tries yet another figure four. She gets cradled in 14 minutes and 20 seconds. Afterwards, she is striking down Mina as Storm enters the ring to check on Mina and gets blasted with a belt shot from behind. And Mercedes teases by grabbing the cake, but then puts the cake down and she takes the champagne and spills it on Luther and then looks into the camera and says, "Your time is up. My time is now."
Yes. I thought a very good match here between these two, you know, maybe I might have been a little bit distracted just because I mean, with Storm there, I was really expecting just a big angle to happen and you didn't really get it. Like, she spent most of the match just completely emotionless as, I guess, a way to play it somewhat differently than what we've come to expect from her. But she didn't get involved. We got a pretty clean finish. I really like the repeated use of the figure fours from Mina leading to, like, Mercedes outsmarting the final figure four at the very end. So, enjoyable match, but, you know, given the sort of, like, setting here, the outcome was something we all expected, and Mina is pretty much just in a supporting role, obviously, here.
It was very good, though. It was, like, very heated with the crowd. They were really into Mina. But everyone's focus was on that damn cake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe they legit had this cake backstage.
I would hope so. Yeah.
The Young Bucks, earlier in the day, purchased a limo using Tony Khan's money, and they went. Matt went on a shopping spree, so this limo is full of shoes, and they go to their favorite childhood spots, beginning with the Bear Glutch Elementary School, featuring this giant bear. And then they would go to an In-N-Out Burger and to their old neighborhood where they were not impressed. I thought this had potential for some funny bits, and they certainly did not meet them here. Just felt
we
like
had what, two?
We had two locations.
That's
we went
it.
To, they went like, to the school that? And they went to like their old house or something.
Yeah, was that really like, I guess those are the highlights of Rancho Cucamonga.
I was like, I mean, then, at least this was close to their house. They didn't have to like get in a day early to go film these vignettes, but it just felt like there was no payoff to these or
really
amusing. Like, you could have had some fun with this in your hometown, but anyway, they would have better contributions to this show. MJF, AR Fox, Anthony Bowens, and Brody King in a casino gauntlet qualifier. So MJF tries to bribe Brody King, but he refuses the money. And then MJF goes to hide behind the Hurt Syndicate as King destroys Bowens and Fox with MJF on commentary and mocking Excalibur's calls. So then MJF eventually gets up and attacks with a chair to the three of them. Excalibur and MVP got into a discussion on whether MJF is the RZA or the JZA of the Hurt Syndicate. Can you weigh in on this?
I guess. Yeah, sure.
Could you assign a role to MJF?
He's either that or he's the old dirty bastard of the group.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Clearly, they knew John Cena was covering this show for us.
Well, Brody returns. He murdered everyone with cannonballs, including one to all three of them at once, and punched a chair into MJF's face. Then we get a procession of cutters by all four of them. They're down, and we get the dreaded thumb to the eye by MJF to Bowens and a hammerlock DDT. King does the Darby spot, choking MJF off the edge of the apron. That's broken up. Hits a gonzo bomb to Bowens, and Fox comes off the top, breaking the cover, but he rebounds into a salt of the earth and submits to MJF in 13 minutes and 2 seconds. So that means MJF will start the gauntlet with Mark Briscoe. I thought a fun four-way that these two had.
I thought it was an excellent match. You know, listen, like, man, Brody King, I know they were in California. But God, like, he gets these reactions, like,
it was a big reaction
places.
When he came out.
Yeah, and it's consistent enough that I really feel like they should have executed on, like, this guy's singles push last year. You know, like, he's so, I think, just exceptional, you know. Especially as a babyface, especially now that we're getting to see him in more of a singles capacity, he completely stood out in this match. And I thought MJF too, though, was incredibly entertaining, doing like finding very creative ways to just execute his cowardly heel style. So those two kind of like wrestling around, you know, Bowens and Fox, who were more so just sort of in the like very entertaining, like almost high flyery type of role, made the match a very entertaining match.
Yes, they qualified to become number 7 and 9 in the gauntlet, I assume, based on their participation in this match. Mark Briscoe comes out with MJF has a tiny kosher pickle shirt. This is one of the most basically designed shirts that will probably sell exceptionally well.
I guess, like, other than an AEW wrestling event,
this is one of those. You would never wear this out in the wild for any reason. And I would argue I wouldn't want to be caught dead in this at a wrestling show. But there will be plenty of these, I'm sure, that circulate.
You know what? Maybe I'd wear one public. You know?
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. If you saw somebody, if you're an AEW fan, you saw somebody wear this, come on, that's an immediate conversation starter, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, hey, MJF's dick. Yeah, man. It's small. Props. This is who I don't make eye contact with.
I've seen like some very like obscure wrestling shirts like walking down the street from time to time. Nothing like this yet, but I hope to see this in the streets of Toronto at some point.
Yeah, if the guy that bought the Vince Loves Cock shirt, I mean, this is probably already, they've already
radar
their credit card info on. Yes, we have actually seen that shirt in the wild. Yeah. So Briscoe comes out. He says that last week he takes issue with the term bitch when he was called a blue collar bitch. And he says he was called by Max and proposes that next week they meet in the ring with two microphones and leave the others in the back so that we can have a talkie talk. A crowd chants talkie talk. And
it's fun. You'll find that on a shirt next week.
We could. Jet Speed then come out and they go after Lashley and Benjamin. And after hitting Pescados, they get murdered by these two. They're left laying in the ring, but Knight yells, "You didn't finish the job. We're still standing." So Lashley and Benjamin return. They murder them a second time with a powerbomb and Dominator, and they go to leave. And Knight says, "We won't back down." So they come back for what Ian Riccaboni called unconscionable violence, and they were murdered a third time. Knight says, "We are still alive, and you may know how to hurt people, but you'll have to kill us to keep those titles." And he tells Shelton that you hit like a bitch. And he challenges Shelton for a match on Collision. So this is our lead up to the tag title match. They won't quit. So at least this was something that they gave Jet Speed as they go into All In Texas.
And I guess gives us like, you know, like an explanation as to why they get beaten up so much heading into like this All In match. And, you know, like they're telling like the Tommy Dreamer story or just any babyface who refuses to give up. And as a choice to promote like these two smaller guys against this completely dominant force in the hurt business, I think it's an interesting like decision. The problem is Tommy Dreamer in that sort of like famous Singapore Kane angle he's just an incredibly sympathetic figure. And I don't feel that way at all about these two, you know, no. Kevin Knight and Mike Bailey, at least not from what I've seen of them. They haven't really given me enough, like, I think, character exposition, nor have these, like, attacks been violent enough for me to feel that bad about them. Like, I watch these, and I just kind of want to cheer for the Hurt Syndicate.
Well, the crowd was. That was the other thing. There were chants of one more time, and we hurt people. Like, they weren't reacting to Jet Speed as, like, these underdog baby faces that we're all getting behind. They just want to watch these monsters run through people. Like that's the difficulty of being in these roles against.
If it was Mark Briscoe in this role, I think it would totally work. You know, like he's beloved and seeing him get beaten up, you just kind of want to see him fight back. I don't really feel that way about these two just yet. You know, also maybe we should mention like we saw MJF appear at MLW to, interact with Mystico. Mystico is going to be on the Collision, so I wonder if there's going to be any sort of interaction with MJF. Mystico is teaming with Mark Briscoe, actually, in their trios match.
That's right. Yes, we will. They are taping it now. We'll go through the Collision matches a little later on. I'm thinking more and more that they're building to that for the anniversary show, I think. With those
interesting.
Two.
Could be. I think it could be Forbidden Door as well. I mean, obviously now MJF is going to be in the Gauntlet. They're promoting this Briscoe interaction almost as like their way of pushing the Gauntlet, which I think has been very effective. We'll see if Mystico plays a part in the Gauntlet. Otherwise, I could see Forbidden Door.
Well, it'll also be interesting if they show the angle from MLW on Collision. Like, wouldn't that, if you were building this for something in Collision, AEW, yeah. you would think like they would show that MLW clip.
Yeah, maybe.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
The Young Bucks arrive, and they are teaming with Konosuke Takeshita against Bandido, Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly. And my God, this match. Bandido hits a Fosbury flop, which is followed by Takeshita's...
Sorry, this was a Heroes versus Villains match?
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Yes, Heroes versus Villains. This was the best Superman crossover of the night.
I guess so.
So Matt hits a high cross. They hit Risky Business. Excalibur gives a shout out to all of you watching on TSN with a belated Happy Canada Day.
Mm-hmm. Thank
Very
you.
Kind of the man for Canada 158.
I'm watching on Thriller, actually.
Oh, well, then go screw off. Guillotine by Kyle O'Reilly onto Matt, but then Matt turns it into a Northern Lights and then a double version with Roderick Strong. Takeshita hits his beautiful blue thunderbomb to Bandido. All six are down. Crowd's going insane. Bandido does the follow-away moonsault on Takeshita, but Nick makes the save, and it's Bandido with an X knee, tries for the 21-plex, but Nick lands on the feet, and then they bounce Bandido into the arms of Takeshita for a tombstone, and they manage the Indie Taker. Double super kick into a wheelbarrow, and then the tackle save as this crowd is on their feet at this point for that sequence. Kyle goes back to the guillotine on Takeshita, who then is free, ducks the PK, and Kyle eats all these super kicks. Takeshita with the forearm smash, and then a three-way EVP trigger by the Villains onto Kyle O'Reilly, who takes the Raging Fire. And this one ends in 11 minutes and 53 seconds. Completely sold me on Supercard of Honor, and this six-man was fantastic.
I thought you were going to say it completely sold you on going to see Superman on July the 11th. Only
I might go to see that, depending on the runtime. It sounds like it's going to be long.
Because of this match?
Almost, I might.
Okay. You're like, I want to see more Heroes versus Villains. Where can I get that?
Well, I hope they got much more mileage out of this than the vignettes that they did to promote the actual movie.
Incredible match. Like, it's a classic Buck style of match. Just incredible speed and coordination to just, man, very intricate sequences executed just as flawlessly as you would expect from, like, you know, these three. Everybody looked amazing, but it's the combo of, like, the Bucks and Takeshita that I really loved here. And it makes me wonder if that was strategic in perhaps making Kazuchika Okada feel a little bit jealous, if this Takeshita Bucks team is something that sticks around.
Do you think this edged out Cody and Jay as Randy Orton's match of the year?
I don't think Jay and Cody
have still clinched it.
I don't think he watches Dynamite.
No?
My feeling.
Yeah. Ospreay and Swerve show up, jumping the Young Bucks, and the Bucks escape. Swerve wants an answer to their challenge from last week, where you will put the EVP titles on the line, and then says, we've got to clarify some things. And this is where we have to address all of the complaints since last Wednesday.
We saw the response on the internet. We're here to answer every one of those message board criticisms.
Yes. He says, now the two of us aren't trying to become EVPs. We want to put that title on you, the people, because the only person that runs this company is Tony Khan. And
so what does that mean? So he wants to. They want to dissolve the EVP power, and they want to give it to Tony.
We want to eliminate this EVP title and trope that we introduced that has gotten a little tired. And
so what? So they're saying by giving it to Tony, they're giving it to us. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, maybe the people can decide. Maybe this will be like you get to vote every week.
Because this didn't exactly, like, you know, the mention of Tony didn't exactly receive like huge ovation. Because I, like, people like Tony, but I don't think like they like Tony enough to feel like he's a direct representation of all of us.
There was definitely a time that this name drop, I think, would have gotten boos like a year and a half ago. Right. that doesn't now, but it's also not the like some big baby face pop either.
Right.
So Ospreay, knowing the history of heels being backdoored into a match, then decides to up the ante by stating, are you guys the Young Bucks or the Young Cucks? Matt isn't falling for it, okay? He's a seasoned veteran. He says, we're the boss, and we're turning this down because we get nothing out of this. And I was like, yes, yes, this is absolutely the response I would have too. So Ospreay tells Swerve, trust me, bruv. And he suggests that if you accept this match and win, then me and Swerve can't challenge for the title for 1 year. And Swerve is baffled by this. So all week long, Swerve, who had to clarify, didn't give this any thought. Like, why would they accept this? What are we putting up here? He never thought of this. And they never talked about this.
Well, either. I mean, maybe Ospreay was like, I'm going to call them the Young Cucks, and for sure they're going to accept it then.
And then he had to just think on the fly. It's like, they're not biting the Young Cucks. I knew I should have made a shirt. So Swerve reluctantly agrees to this stipulation, and the Young Bucks agree. So that is the tag match for All In Texas. I would state this, that listen, it's going to be a tremendous match, but it's not like Ospreay and Swerve have like lacked title matches under this horrendous Young Bucks regime, which they are now placing themselves in. It's like they've had their...
Because the Bucks couldn't stop them from earning those title shots.
I mean, they did cost Swerve the title match, but he still was granted a title match itself. It's not like these guys can't run in on matches and such.
Okay, but now they can't even challenge for the title.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like it hasn't been that bad for them, but...
I think it's a great step, actually. Like, this could have been the plan the whole time, but you know, I'm happy that we got to see the scene play out and like having a bit more of a sort of reasonable back and forth with the Bucks turning it down and having the baby faces offer something of real value. The fact that it's got a 1 year stipulation attached to it avoids the Cody situation, which I think would have been a mistake, you know, either way, would have been completely unbelievable another way.
And there's also, I would not advocate for this. I don't think it would be the move I would make, but you could at least theorize that if Will Ospreay was going to go for this title, it absolutely should be at Wembley next year. And yeah, he should not be winning this title before then. And it's at least a storyline that you could keep this guy. Like, that's your 1 year story of him going for this title at the biggest show that they're going to have next.
Well, I think so much of like the Ospreay dance so far at AEW has been like,
Keep him away?
Yeah, seeing them come up with creative ways to keep him away from the world championship, because he's been so well, he's been losing. Like, so I guess that it's reasonable that way, but giving him the stipulation and giving Swerve the stipulation allows them to like continue winning and continue getting really, really, really hot, but being unable to challenge for the championship until All In next year. So I think ultimately this, like, I think the EVP thing is going away. Like, I think this is, but I could reasonably see either outcome taking place. In fact, I see a lot more drama being built from Ospreay and Swerve losing, because having them lose again builds to All In really well, and both of their campaigns to like winning the Owen, for instance, really, really well. And it also gives them a reason to hate each other, because Ospreay got Swerve into this situation and has now cost him an entire year's worth of time, keeping him away from the world championship.
Yeah, I would say like the argument to that is that the idea of this Hangman title run, and you're going to take both of these guys out of that mix for a year, like, it does really affect your main event picture. Like, yeah, you have like that. I wouldn't say like it's the worst idea if you have like a long-term plan for this. All that is to say is that it's not one of these stipulations where you can't see.
It's
like
a great
I think you're intrigued by the outcome here, because the obvious is the Bucks just lose these titles, and that's the safe option. But they could have some long-term play as well, if there's a reason for it.
It would still allow them to challenge for the Kenny Okada championship.
You know, that's right. They could also create new titles too, like, you know, different continental championships. Sure. Then we got the return of Kenny Omega from injury. He was in a cape.
Yeah, this would not have been
Do you think this was planned out before he vomited out his diverticulitis?
There's no great way to avoid this, unfortunately. Like, they just, you know, this is the cross promotion.
Yeah, this, dude, these were just not good. I don't know how to, like, summarize them. It was just, they were really uncomfortable, and they, I would say they tried, but, like, these were, like, 60-second bits that just needed something to punch up the dialogue or have something witty in there. Something for, like, the wrestling fans, too. Like, it just felt like it was just bad comedy.
Yeah. No, I wasn't a fan.
Ospreay and Swerve are still in the ring, and this whole commercial break, Swerve is trying to figure out what he's just agreed to. And Beast Mortos and Dralistico come out, and the early explanation for Swerve getting beaten down is that he may be distracted by this stipulation that he has just agreed to. And Taz explains how you can't have things on your mind when you're going into matches. It's a distraction. So anyway, Swerve was able to overcome this and make the hot tag. Ospreay hit a space flying tiger drop to the floor. Dralistico comes off the rope into a destroyer on Ospreay. And then the pop-up Samoan by Mortos is turned into a crucifix bomb. And we get some double team moves by Swerve and Ospreay. So they had time to go to the gym and work out these double team moves, but they never talked about, you know, how are we going to get these guys to agree to this match? But they came out with a Swerve stomp into a Stormbreaker on Mortos and then pressed Dralistico in the air as Will catches them for a Styles Clash, and they end it with the house call in 8:44 and the two hug and shake hands afterward.
Yeah, this was another heroes versus villains match, and the heroes won. You know, very strong showcase here for the baby faces. I'm really loving Ospreay and Swerve as a team, and it's not just for the moves. For me, like, the interest, I would say, like, largely comes from just seeing how well illustrated their character dynamics are. Swerve is, like, you know, finally warming up to another person and putting himself out there to trust Ospreay, only for Ospreay to, while very pure in his motivation to stop these EVPs, potentially, like, he's going to be potentially screwed by Will Ospreay's decision making. So I can't wait to see how it all screws up for the two of them, and I can't wait to see these two implode. I hope I hope these two will become outstanding world title rivals in years to come, and we'll look back at, like, a match like this one against, like, Dralistico and Beast Mortos as, like, one of the building blocks of the relationship. So I feel like we're in for some very good long-term storytelling with these two.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the Movie starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. And then the main event that had probably the most curiosity was what is Kota Ibushi going to look like in a big AEW TV main event taking on Kazuchika Okada. Don Callis on commentary says that when they beat down Omega, they could smell the diverticulitis coming out of Omega's mouth from his sick intestines.
Wow.
Theater of the mind right there. Yeah. Ibushi is sent into the steps. He's being beaten down repeatedly by Okada, and then he fires back with strikes. Okada would stop him and applies the money clip, which none of the announcers knew the name of. Maybe this has just been, this is the forgotten era.
Excalibur knew.
Well, he didn't pipe in here. It's applied by Okada, and then lands with the top rope elbow, and Ibushi stops a Rainmaker attempt, and after taking a shotgun dropkick, we get a semblance of Murder Ibushi as he just no-sells, and the man is starting to turn back the clock.
And this is a crowd that completely recognized all of his stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He fires back out of the corner. He ducked a Rainmaker and hit this wind-up lariat to Okada, and then teases the Phoenix Splash, which, I don't know, like, part of it is, like, they haven't explained, like, the significance of that with Okada and Ibushi at all, and they made no reference to it, but that was, like, a really, obviously these two wanted to call back to that, but there was no reference to the 2020 injury.
The only mention was from Ian talking about the match, but not the spot in particular, I don't believe.
So he is stopped from executing the Phoenix Splash, and Okada Germans him off the turnbuckle, and then Ibushi ducks yet another Rainmaker, and they go up to the top turnbuckle, and dude, Ibushi hits a Tiger Driver off the top to Okada.
The way the angle caught this was from,
I thought Okada landed on his head from
it
the
was
angle.
From Ibushi's back, right? So we couldn't see Okada's landing. We could only see him invert. And like, oh my God, I leapt out of my seat.
The same. Like the angle, you thought that Okada did not get like rotated, and it looked fine when you saw it from the other angle. But my God, the faith that Okada had in this, with like, no offense.
Well,
but,
like from the other angle, it looked very like relatively safe.
It did. But I'm just saying, like this being pitched, I was like, are you okay? 15 minutes into this match, you're gonna pull this off, no problem. So. Hits this like one of the biggest moves Okada has taken in a long, long time, and he gets a near fall off of this, and then the Kamigoye is countered. Ibushi holds on to the wrist, and Okada manages a lariat, hits the drop kick, and then a Rainmaker to put Ibushi down in 14 minutes and 47 seconds. And I would say this is definitely the best I have seen Kota Ibushi look since 2021.
Yeah. I thought it was an awesome match, you know?
Yeah, and they had a really, like, this was a really strong show of wrestling, and this did not, this was not the match of the show, but that's not to say that this was above, I didn't know what to expect in this match, to be quite honest. Like, I was going into this one where I figured they would have time, and we'd at least get a pretty clear answer of how Ibushi was going to fare in a situation like this.
Yeah, let's be clear, okay? Like, I mean, I think if this was the match they had in the G1, I don't know if we'd be like singing its praises so much, but like I have very tempered expectations in 2025 for a Kota Ibushi versus Kazuchika Okada match on TV. And I thought this exceeded them. Now, like, to me, this was proof that Ibushi is back to a certain level. Is he back to his prime? I don't know about that yet. I don't think we can really say that at all. But is he the best that he's looked since the shoulder injury? I think we could definitely say yes, at least, you know, from the sampling I've seen of his work since then.
Is he getting the Wei Ting stamp of perfectly serviceable?
He's getting more than that. I mean, this made me so happy. This made me really happy to see, because it was, I felt like a... Just like it's a sign that like he's somehow been able to get back, you know, whatever he lost in that amount of time. And I was just happy to see it, you know. And as far as Okada goes too, I mean, I'm hearing a lot more people like, you know, be down on like the AEW like Okada in-ring experiment, especially when it comes to TV. But I thought this was a good example of what the style is able to offer. It was like a classic Okada New Japan pace in that it's obviously much slower at the beginning. But he plays it up now a lot more because he's a heel. And in fact, like rather than being, I think, conservative, it comes across as laziness, which I think is part of the intent. But they built up to the closing sequence really well. They did a great job of firing Ibushi up. And there was some great creativity using the wrist control towards the ending. And it ultimately resulted, I thought, in what I thought was a very satisfying match.
The Don Callis family are in the ring, and they start stomping on Ibushi, and the crowd knows what's happening next, and Kenny Omega runs down, chasing them out with a chair. I was wishing he had the cape on, but no, he ditched that. And Trent is behind Omega with a baton and gets stopped by Ibushi, where the two fight off Trent, and then they have the big hug, and the crowd went wild. Really strong ending to the show as well, with the Golden Lovers coming together as Kenny gets set for All In.
Yeah, it was awesome. Great way to close the show, and I thought it ended up what was a very good edition of Dynamite.
I would love to see if... It's weird, kind of the political dynamic of Kota Ibushi with New Japan, but these two teaming up at Forbidden Door would be a nice follow-up to All In.
I didn't even think about the sort of awkwardness of the New Japan dynamic. For that reason, I don't expect them to even be at Forbidden Door.
Yeah.
Unless, well, like, something...
I mean, they don't have to face a New Japan team either.
Yeah.
There's ways of...
No, but, like, but isn't it still... Is it still considered a co-promoted show? But it's mainly an AEW show.
It's just basically an AEW show, yes. Right. But, I mean, it is.
Because, like, Shibata has wrestled on these shows.
I love the idea that we're talking about a show called Forbidden Door, where it's like, oh, that's too forbidden.
You can't have any AAA wrestlers. You can't have any.
I mean, dude, if CMLL is allowing Beast Mortos back in, I mean, it's like, you know,
it's the real Forbidden Door.
That's the more surprising one. But I thought this was a really excellent show overall. You had I thought the women's the TBS title match was really, like, honestly, all the matches were mm-hmm. very good on this show. But that trios match was out of this world. That was my match of the show, but it continues a very strong build for All In as well.
And the Paige Mox segment I thought was fantastic to start the show. I think everything, even like the stipulation with like the Bucks and Paige and Ospreay, I thought was really well told as well. Man, I think the show is in really great shape. Now, we didn't get any like new match announcements. We had
well, technically, the Bucks Swerve Ospreay was officially announced. Well, we got the stipulation, and what we got MJF added to the gauntlet. I think that was the only additions to the show we had tonight.
Do you want to talk? What's the updated card right now?
What
six matches? So six matches here. We got John Moxley versus Hangman Page for the AEW Championship. Now a Texas Death Match. We've got Timeless Tony Storm taking on Mercedes Moné. Okada versus Kenny Omega. Winner takes all unification match for the AEW Unified Championship. Men's Casino Gauntlet. Women's Casino Gauntlet. And Swerve and Ospreay versus the Bucks for EVP status.
It's six matches, but they're six matches that all are going to get a lot of time.
Yeah. And it's not just going to be six matches.
No, I don't know if we're going to get one of like the 14-15 match level. Like this one might be like a
I don't
cool
know if we're
12,
gonna get...
maybe 12 we'll get.
A breezy, 13.
There will be nothing breezy this weekend, that weekend at all. But yeah, there's still a lot to add.
Last year's All In had 12 matches.
Okay. Well,
Including the prelims, So that means on the main card was only eight matches, actually.
Okay. Yeah, that is definitely more conservative
maybe we're close
number.
The
matches they did announce for Collision 100 included FTR and the Outrunners, the All-Star 8-Woman Tag with Thunder Rosa, Queen Aminata, Anna Jay, and Ty Mello against Julia Hart, Megan Bain, Tekla, and Athena, all of whom I assume are in the gauntlet. Kyle Fletcher against Daniel Garcia. I mean, I'm thinking we're getting FTR against Daniel Garcia in some form or fashion at the show. Right. You've got to get something for the Paragon on the show. Like the show will
put them on after the Texas Death Match. Paragon versus Don Callis family.
The post limbs with Paragon, and then Mystico, Hologram, and Mark Briscoe against Trent Beretta, Rocky Romero, and Hechicero.
I think we have to expect some sort of MJF involvement in that one.
Yeah, it's just.
With Briscoe and Mystico on the same side.
Do you see Mystico being in the gauntlet? Like maybe that's a spot
I do.
Like I don't know how hard you push MJF and Mystico when like the match is probably a ways away. But
I obviously think this could be Forbidden Door.
It'll be interesting. Like that would be it's either going to be Forbidden Door or the anniversary show. That would be my thought. Or you could do both. Like you could do back to back matches and do a rematch at Arena Mexico as well. Okay. Well, they're, man, losing my voice at this late hour. But that wraps up Dynamite 300.
Happy 300th Rewind to Dynamite, John.
What are your favorite 100 of the three?
Maybe the second 100.
The second?
Yeah.
Was that when they were really hitting their stride?
201 to 300, yeah. Wait, okay. Sorry, 101 to 200, yeah.
Okay, wow. Well.
I'm serious. I'm not going to sit back and take this fucking shit.
We are going to say goodbye to everyone on YouTube, but we will be continuing as we...
What was that from? What is that clip from?
That was a press conference.
Like, what was he talking about?
Something to do with WWE.
Oh my God. Great. Yeah.
It's angry Tony. We have got feedback to get to on the forum where you can always leave your feedback. Do hit subscribe on the YouTube channel. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, including this Friday when we are going to be celebrating 2 hours of SmackDown this Friday night. It's a taped show. I don't care. It's going to be over at 10 Eastern, meaning we will be talking 5 minutes later.
It's the 4th of July. We're going to be shooting fireworks in the background of our basements.
I'm just like, Thank you. That's going to be the tone of Friday's show, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Goodbye on YouTube, but hey, the party keeps going on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.